Hello everybody, my name is Slade. Welcome to DLC Episode 2. Call of Duty 2, Big Red 1, came out on November 1st, 2005, developed by Treyarch, Grey Matter Studios, High Voltage Software, and Grey Matter Interactive Studios, published by Activision. It's a side story of the original game, Call of Duty 2, which was released on Xbox 360 and PC in the same year. Let's talk about the Collector's Edition, which has a bonus DVD. That bonus also includes 4 exclusive character skins for multiplayer, interviews, mocap, and voiceover session footage from the in-game voice actors that were a part of the Band of Brothers cast. Interviews with World War II veterans of the Big Red 1, including memories of in-game events. Multiplayer map fly-throughs with DVD-style developer commentary, tips, interesting facts, things like that. Behind the scenes with Treyarch discussing the development of Call of Duty 2 Big Red 1, concept and production art gallery, sketches, storyboards, just general art, renders, things like that. And on the GameCube version, there still credits the multiplayer staff, although there's no multiplayer on that version of this game. On the Xbox version, you have the Call of Duty 2 promo trailer, which is pretty cool. Because Call of Duty 2, if I'm not mistaken off the top of my head, was a launch title for the 360. All the weapons in the game have their iron sights misaligned. In the game manual, on the third page, it seems to have changed the version of the SAS emblem. The logo for the military channel in the noir newsreel style epilogue and prologue for every mission is a direct product placement for the real-life military channel, which has been rebranded as Discovery Wings in the same year of the game's release. It's now called the American Heroes Channel as of 2014. It's also several times the Wilhelm scream can be heard in different chapters of the single player. Let's talk about the story of the game. In Call of Duty 2 Big Red 1, you take control of American soldier Private Roland Roger of the 1st Infantry Division throughout the entire game, except for one level where the player takes control of the main character's brother as the gunner in a bomber mission. The bomber mission is okay, nothing too exciting, just shooting planes, and honestly, it's a lackluster bombing run, but I don't really know at the time with the technology what they could have done with it. The game starts off in a level in France. You already know your squad apparently pretty good. If I'm not mistaken off the top of my head, you're at the moment corporal. You take place in a small battle where you get shelled and your character passes out. This triggers a flashback to the beginning of your military career, as it was, in a battle in North Africa during what was known as the Battle of Oran, or it's called the Baptism by Fire. Soon you're led by Sergeant Hawkins and with some other troops in the 1st Infantry Division as you move on from Kasserine Pass to Kasserine itself, and soon the final battle in an airfield. It's over pretty quickly, with concluding with the bomber mission of a B-24 Liberator over the Mediterranean. There's a couple of highlights in this. Obviously, you know, I'm a little bit of a tank nerd myself. That's a good highlight. You get to command a M4 Stuart, which is a tank you don't hear, or no, it's an M3 Stuart. I think it's the fourth variant, but that's neither here nor there. Not a great thing to be in when you're up against tanks that are a lot more powerful. You also get to use one of the half-tracks with a field gun mounted on the back of it, which is pretty cool as well. The other really interesting thing, and it's historically accurate, is that you're fighting the Italians and the French in this part of it, who were part of the German invasion at the time. They were conscripted, or they were just forced into fighting. You know, they weren't really that battle hardened, and they were as naive as the Americans at the time. In some cases, not everything was the fancy General Rommel, who he's cunning as a fox or whatever. A lot of it was poorly trained Italian soldiers who were ready to quit anyway because they were tired of being in the desert. versus the fresh Americans who had zero experience themselves. After you're done with the North African campaign, you start Operation Husky, which is the invasion of Sicily, moving into Italy. Now, what's notable about this is that Winston Churchill was really pushing for this. No one else really wanted it, but he called it the soft underbelly of Europe. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not a very good Winston Churchill impression. Oh, the soft underbelly of Europe. You know, you got to get the jowls in there. So it starts with the Battle of Gallia, where you rescue some of the 82nd Airborne Division. You also go against Hermann Göring's Panzer Division, which is also cool, and then some fights through Triona, which escalates soon with the capture of Italy. There's some notable things in here. You get to see a lot of the Italian weapons, which again, I want to go back to the, and I'll talk about it later, the variety of weapons in this game. Now, there's a Italian LMG that no matter what you do, it's it wasn't reloaded accurately. It's not that I know how every single gun reloads in the world. I know a lot about firearms, but when you do reload it, your character only inserts 15 bullets into the side clip, but you get 20 shots, which doesn't really make a lot of sense, but it always kind of made me laugh a bit. It's also got some of the worst iron sights in the game, if I'm honest with you. But beyond that, it's a pretty interesting thing to get to use. I don't think, off the top of my head, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's our only Call of Duty that takes place in Italy. The only other game I can think of that has an Italian campaign is Medal of Honor Airborne. Obviously not a Call of Duty because it's a Medal of Honor game. But I don't think we see much of it. I know that Monte Cassino and some other places in Italy and Sicily had some of the most ferocious fighting in it. It would be interesting to get to go to that kind of place and see more of those battles. I guess it's because it's not the interesting stuff like what was going on in France and Russia is why we don't see it. After the fighting in Sicily, the 1st Infantry Division is moved to England, where the player participates in the D-Day invasion. Your main objective is not only storming the beach, thankfully you don't go first. It's kind of ironic with you being the Big Red One. Tagline for them is first in the fight. Anyways, you destroy some bunkers and warehouses, and you take a control of a Flak 88, or if you hear people yell just 88, to win the level, basically using it to destroy other warehouses and buildings that are preventing other people from moving in on the beach. You then move on to Mons and Elmendorf, where you're basically just fighting through France, getting closer and closer to fighting in Germany with a level in the Hürtgen Forest. It's not too much to say if you've played any other Call of Duty with the, you know, fighting in France level. You're not really missing out on too much. The only big notes here is that your sergeant in the game, Sergeant Hawkins, he dies in this one, and it's really kind of it does hit you a bit, mainly because of how much time that you've spent with these characters and been along with them the whole time. After that, we're at the last two levels, where Buchholz and the Siegfried line, where you get to do a couple of cool things. One of them is this town. You come across a group of Germans trying to refuel their Panzer IV tank. Now, the game is like, oh, it's a Tiger. Now, this is a, I don't know if this is intentional or what, because at the time, you know, everybody's like, oh, Tiger tank's the best. It's arguably one of the worst tanks ever developed, but the model they use is actually a Panzer IV with the side skirts on. You can tell by the, what's called the cupola or cupella, depending how you ask to pronounce it, which is like the little vision slits for the commander sticking up the top. That's a Panzer IV, Seven Ways of Sunday. Now, the reason the crew calls it a Tiger is because that's the name of the tank that every soldier knew. They all knew Tiger. No one would, you know, begin to recognize the difference between a Panzer III and a Panzer IV beyond some nerd like myself. You take control of that to get through the rest of the cults. And then you take on the Siegfried line and the dreaded, what's called Dragon's Teeth. They're these giant concrete trapezoids. to basically make a quote-unquote impenetrable line into Germany. Obviously, it gets penetrated. And it ends with you taking out a couple of V2 rockets, which is it's a bit weird and it seems very abrupt. But with Call of Duty, Two Big Red Ones tends to focus much more on heavily on character aspect of the player squad mates. Like I said, you know, you learn their names, and you, if you pay close attention to them in bits where you're just not in combat, you know, the brief moments that you are, because it is a Call of Duty game and you have to be in combat every 2 seconds, you'll watch a lot of them get older, more mature. They stop joking about as much. You even get some that are replacements in your squad to replace other people who died in different parts of the game and in the story. You'll see them go from scared soldiers to, like, leading the charge. It's pretty, pretty cool. I don't think this game is perfect in any way, or it's the best Call of Duty, technically speaking, but I think it is the best when it comes to immersion, because you spend so much time following one squad with one group of people. You're not bouncing around through a bunch of different stories, and you start to get attached to the characters because their personalities get to shine so much. And I really credit that to the Band of Brothers cast, who really nailed their roles so well. You're not only watching them as they age and mature, but you watch them as they die and get replaced and new people brought in. And that adds so much, because that's closer to, you know, what would be happening to somebody in this role who made it that far. They would have, you know, they'd come in young and gutting it with so many other people around their age, and, you know, they went through basic together. Your friend dies, and then they're just replaced with someone else. I also might be repeating a bit of sentiment here, and maybe a bit, but I do wish these Call of Duties I've been talking about for the last 2 weeks are more accessible for people to play. I remain hopeful with the recent acquisition by Microsoft. These games could surely use a lot from a remaster or a remake from the ground up. I would hate to see it with the way Activision currently is, with multiplayer being the only thing that matters. I don't think they understand what story means anymore. I don't think there's a right or left behind at the moment, just people to keep making money for the machine. But, you know, I can always keep a little glimmer of hope. Now, I did talk about how it has the voice casting from Band of Brothers. So I kind of called this one Call of Quips, because, man, whatever they paid them, they certainly got their money's worth. One of the characters I think of immediately is Brooklyn. He's from the Bronx, but they call him Brooklyn. You know, really bad New York accent. And one of the things is you keep hearing him yell, "Oh, I'm from the Bronx," you know, but in the terrible accent that it is. And but the thing is, as you watch, he doesn't make it through the war, Brooklyn. But as you watch him go through, those quips go away, and you start seeing him become more as a leader and mature. And I just think that's excellent. It's a far cry from what we get nowadays. Again, I know I'm repeating myself on that, but it's so, so cool. Now, the ending seems a bit rushed, and it seems a bit weird, because the, if you know anything about history, you've probably heard about the V2 rockets. V2 rockets, also called buzz bombs by the British public, were around for a while. But they didn't keep those things anywhere near the front lines. Those things were always hidden off somewhere, or they'd be somewhere where they could actually be useful. Not near the front lines. You don't put something like that on the front lines, period. I think they just did it because it makes for an epic climax to the end of it. You defeat those and it's cool, but I mean, well, I guess it's not cool, because all you do is hold X or square and you put some bombs on it. Ooh, whoop-de-doo. I mean, it's not much else to it. This Call of Duty also stands out for the variety of the weapons. I mean, you don't see this many weapons in a normal Call of Duty when you're just fighting the Germans, but you get weapons from nearly everybody. Obviously, you're going to miss out on the Russians and the British, since we're only following the American storyline here. But you get to wield the shoulder-mounted 30 cal. There's the Italian army. There is the French. There are the... I already said Italian. There's the French. There are different weapons for the desert fighting. There's obviously the German weapons. And then just a variety of the American ones as well. It's really nice to see that thing. And the sound design on all of them are so unique and so different. They did so much with the... reloading on all of them. It's really nice to see. A lot of those guns, I don't think you ever see again. I don't think anybody's seen a Chatelet, which is a French LMG, in any other Call of Duty. Getting to use a Stuart tank is pretty unique. They were very common in the desert campaign. They did, the Stuart tank was also used in Sicily and in Europe, but at that point their armor was so thin and they were a bit outdated by the tech at the time, so they're mostly used for reconnaissance or radio tanks, essentially something to, or drag artillery, you know, because there was still some hanging around, but it was pretty easy to take one out by this time with what they had around. It was also pretty cool getting to drive the Panzer IV, that again is 100% not a Tiger. What's interesting about that, what makes it seem weird, is that, you know, you would think driving a tank and operating one is pretty hard. If the Germans would build a very overcomplicated tank, but the nice thing about it is, with the M4 Shermans the same, if you can drive a car, you can drive one of theirs. The Germans like the steering wheel set up over the levers for their driving and operation. So it's not 100% too absurd to picture a group of Americans finding one that just got fueled and was running to hop in it and use it. I mean, you wouldn't really do that practically in real life, because you would just chuck a grenade down it to immobilize it. But, you know, for the level, it's really cool. I actually kind of wish that was the ending. I don't think they really knew where to end it, because it... I don't know if it'd be more melodramatic to just be like, oh, here's your letter, the war's over, you're going home, hooray, versus the V2 rocket ending. I think the V2 rocket ending was them just trying to make it a little bombastic, but it falls flat. It does fall flat. The only neat thing about it is that you plant your bombs on it, run away, and a column of tanks show up, and the rocket falls and explodes on them. Which is kind of like, haha, very cool, look at us, aren't we awesome? But, nah, not really. I don't think it's that great, if I'm honest. Well, that's another one down. The next one's going to be Call of Duty 3. That's another Treyarch Call of Duty. I'm in the middle of playing it now as I record this for you to listen to. I hope you've enjoyed the DLC. This kind of came as a last minute... I'll give you a little peek behind the curtain. This kind of came as a last minute idea from me, where I was trying to fill in the gap for Two Blokes from Blighty. And I hope this is good. I hope y'all are enjoying it. I'm actually nervous about it, because I've never done anything like this, but I thought it would be a fun experiment to do and try. Maybe if people like it, we can keep doing them. No schedule on them, but maybe, you know, just if one of us has an idea for an audio essay like this, you know, to get our thoughts out on a game we played that won't be reviewed, because there's no good way to review it, I don't think this is a bad idea. I would like to thank you all very much for listening. My name is Slade. You can find me at pretty much everywhere at Slade Plays Games, except for Instagram. That is Slade's Life. You can find me on the Game Club Pod here. You can also find me with Between Two Pods. And I really hope that you've enjoyed listening to this. If you'd like to get in on the discussion, you could at me at one of those places, or make sure to join our Discord for some conversation about this. Thank you very much for your time and listening, and I hope you have a great day.